Welcome to Gima's Tales for Children. Each week, we visit a different part of the world to hear stories, legends, and myths. Some of these stories are so old that the origin has been lost in time. Some are new, and some are timeless. Join us this week as we travel to England. England is part of the United Kingdom, which includes Wales, Scotland, and Ireland. It is the most populated country in all of Europe and is separated from the rest of Europe by a very narrow channel of water. So narrow, in fact, that the two countries of England and France on the other side built an underground tunnel that one can drive through. It is called the Channel. The author of the Harry Potter books, J.K. Rowling, lives here, and perhaps a bit of English history inspired her stories. The English have many legends of great wizards, such as Merlin, of kings and queens, knights and fairies, elves and gnomes. For further information about England for children, I suggest kids.nationalgeographic.com. Our first tale is an ancient legend made famous in a poem by Sir Walter Scott. Here is Binnaree. Once upon a time, there were two king's daughters who lived in a bower near the bonny mill dams of Binnaree, and Sir William came wooing the eldest and won her love and plighted troth with glove and with ring. But after a time, he looked upon the youngest with her cherry cheeks and golden hair, and his love grew towards her till he cared no longer for the eldest one. So she hated her sister for taking away Sir William's love, and day by day her hate grew upon her, and she plotted and she planned how to get rid of her. So one fine morning, fair and clear, she said to her sister, "Let us go and see our father's boats come in at the bonny mill stream of Binnaree." So they went there hand in hand, and when they got to the river's bank, the youngest got up upon a stone to watch for the coming of the boats, and her sister, coming behind her, caught her round the waist and dashed her into the rushing mill stream of Binnaree. "Oh, sister, sister, reach me your hand," she cried as she floated away, "and you shall have half of all I've got or shall get." "No, sister, I'll reach you no hand of mine, for I am the heir to all your land. Shame on me if I touch the hand that has come twixt me and my own heart's love." Oh, sister, then reach me your glove," she cried as she floated further away, "and you shall have your William again." "Sink on," cried the cruel princess. "No hand or glove of mine you'll touch. Sweet William will be all mine when you are sunk beneath the bonny mill stream of Binnaree." And she turned and went home to the king's castle. Now the miller's daughter was cooking that day and needed water for her cooking, and as she went to draw it from the stream, she saw something floating towards the mill dam, and she called out, "Father, father, draw your dam. There's something white, a merry maid or a milk-white swan, coming down the stream." So the miller hastened to the dam and stopped the heavy, cruel mill wheels, and then they took out the princess and laid her on the bank. Fair and beautiful she looked as she lay there, but she was drowned, drowned. And as she lay there in her beauty, a famous harper passed by the mill dam of Binnaree and saw her sweet, pale face. And though he traveled on far away, he never forgot that face, and after many days he came back to the bonny mill stream of Binnaree. But then all he could find of her where they had put her to rest were her bones and her golden hair. So he made a harp out of her breastbone and her hair and traveled on up the hill from the mill dam of Binnaree till he came to the castle of the king, her father. That night they were all gathered in the castle hall to hear the great harper, king and queen, their daughter and son, Sir William, and all their court. And first the harper sang to his old harp, making them joy and be glad or sorrow, and weep just as he liked. But while he sang, he put the harp he had made that day on a stone in the hall, and presently it began to sing by itself, low and clear, and the harper stopped, and all were hushed. And this was what the harp sang. "Oh, yonder sits my father, the king, Binnaree, oh, Binnaree, and yonder sits my mother, the queen, by the bonny mill dams of Binnaree, and yonder stands my brother Hugh, Binnery, O Binnery, and by him, my William, false and true, by the bonny mill dams of Binnery. Then they all wondered, and the old harper told them how he had seen the princess lying drowned on the bank near the bonny mill dams of Binnery, and how he had made afterwards this harp out of her hair and breastbone. Just then the harp began singing again, and this was what it sang out loud and clear. And there sits my sister who drowned me by the bonny mill dams of Binnery. And the harp snapped and broke and never sang more. The next story is one we all think we've heard, but have you heard the original version from England? It has a little twist at the end that I found surprising. Here is the story of the three little pigs. There was an old sow with three little pigs, and as she had not enough to keep them, she sent them out to seek their fortune. The first that went off met a man with a bundle of straw and said to him, "Please give me the straw to build me a house," which the man did, and the little pig built a house with it. Presently came along a wolf and knocked at the door and said, "Little pig, little pig, let me come in." To which the pig answered, "No, no, by the hair of my chinny chin chin." The wolf then answered to that, "Then I'll huff and I'll puff and I'll blow your house in." So he huffed and he puffed and he blew his house in and ate up the little pig. The second little pig met a man with a bundle of furs and said, "Please, man, give me that furs to build a house." Which the man did, and the pig built his house. Then along came the wolf and said, "Little pig, little pig, let me come in." "No, no, by the hair of my chinny chin chin." "Then I'll huff and I'll puff and I'll blow your house in." So he huffed and he puffed and he puffed and he huffed, and at last he blew the house down, and he ate up the little pig. The third little pig met a man with a load of bricks and said, "Please, man, give me those bricks to build a house with." So the man gave him the bricks, and he built his house with them. So the wolf came, as he did to the other little pigs, and said, "Little pig, little pig, let me come in." "No, no, by the hair of my chinny chin chin." "Then I'll huff and I'll puff and I'll blow your house in." Well, he huffed and he puffed and he huffed and he puffed and he puffed and he huffed, but he could not get the house down. When he found that he could not, with all his huffing and puffing, blow the house down, he said, "Little pig, I know where there is a nice field of turnips."
"Where?" cried the little pig.
"Oh, in Mr. Smith's home field, and if you will be ready tomorrow morning, I will call for you, and we will go together and get some for dinner."
"Very well," said the little pig. "I'll be ready. What time do you mean to go?"
"Oh, at 6 o'clock.
Well, the little pig got up at 5 and got the turnips before the wolf came, which he did about 6, and who said,
"Little pig, are you ready?"
The little pig said, "Ready. I have been and come back again and got a nice pot full for dinner." The wolf felt very angry at this, but thought that he would be up to the little pig somehow or other, so he said,
"Little pig, I know where there's a nice apple tree."
"Where?" said the pig.
"Down at Merry Garden," replied the wolf, "and if you will not deceive me, I will come for you at 5 o'clock tomorrow and get some apples."
Well, the little pig bustled up the next morning at 4 o'clock and went off for the apples, hoping to get back before the wolf came, but he had further to go and had to climb the tree, so that just as he was coming down from it, he saw the wolf coming, which, as you may suppose, frightened him very much. When the wolf came up, he said,
"Little pig, what? Are you here before me? Are they nice apples?"
"Yes, very," said the little pig. "I will throw you down one." And he threw it so far that, while the wolf was gone to pick it up, the little pig jumped down and ran home. The next day the wolf came again and said to the little pig,
"Little pig, there's a fair at Shanklin this afternoon. Will you go?"
"Oh, yes," said the pig. "I will go. What time shall you be ready?"
"At 3, said the pig.
So the little pig went off before the time as usual and got to the fair and bought a butter churn, which he was going home with when he saw the wolf coming. Then he could not tell what to do, so he got into the churn to hide and by so doing turned it round, and it rolled down the hill with the pig in it, which frightened the wolf so much that he ran home without going to the fair. He went to the little pig's house and told him how frightened he had been by a great round thing which came down the hill past him. Then the little pig said, "Ha! I frightened you then. I had been to the fair and bought a butter churn, and when I saw you I got into it and rolled down the hill." Then the wolf was very angry indeed, and declared he would eat up the little pig, and that he would get down the chimney after him. When the little pig saw what he was about, he hung on the pot full of water and made up a blazing fire, and just as the wolf was coming down, took off the cover, and in fell the wolf. So the little pig put on the cover again in an instant, boiled him up, and ate him for supper, and lived happily ever after. The next story is about magic and spells so often found in English fairy tales. Here is Earl Mar's Daughter. One fine summer's day, Earl Mar's daughter went into the castle garden, dancing and tripping along, and as she played and sported, she would stop from time to time to listen to the music of the birds. After a while, as she sat under the shade of a green oak tree, she looked up and spied a sprightly dove sitting high up on one of its branches. She said, "Coo, my dove, my dear, come down to me, and I will give you a golden cage. I'll take you home and pet you well as any bird of them all." Scarcely had she said these words when the dove flew down from the branch and settled on her shoulder, nestling up against her neck while she smoothed its feathers. Then she took it home to her own room. The day was done and the night came on, and Earl Mar's daughter was thinking of going to sleep when, turning round, she found at her side a handsome young man. She was startled, for the door had been locked for hours, but she was a brave girl and said, "What are you doing here, young man, to come and startle me so? The door was barred these hours ago. However did you come here?" "Hush, hush," the young man whispered. "I was that cooing dove that you coaxed from off the tree." "But who are you then?" she said quite low. "And how came you to be changed into that dear little bird?" "My name is Florentine, and my mother is a queen, and something more than a queen, for she knows magic and spells, and because I would not do as she wished, she turned me into a dove by day, but at night her spells lose their power, and I become a man again. Today I crossed the sea and saw you for the first time, and I was glad to be a bird, that I could come near you. Unless you love me, I shall never be happy more."
"But if I love you," says she, "will you not fly away and leave me one of these fine days?"
"Never, never," said the prince. "Be my wife, and I'll be yours forever. By day, a bird, by night, a prince. I will always be by your side, and a husband dear." So they were married in secret and lived happily in the castle, and no one knew that every night Coo My Dove became Prince Florentine, and every year a little son came to them, as bonny could be. But as each son was born, Prince Florentine carried the little thing away on his back over the sea to where the queen his mother lived, and left the little one with her. 7 years passed thus, and then a great trouble came to them. For the Earl Mar wished to marry his daughter to a noble of high degree who came wooing her. Her father pressed her sore, but she said,
"Father dear, I do not wish to marry. I can be quite happy with Coo My Dove here."
Then her father got into a mighty rage and swore a great big oath and said, "Tomorrow, so sure as I live and eat, I'll twist that birdie's neck," and set out and stamped from the room.
"Oh, oh," said Coo My Dove, "it's time that I was away."
And so he jumped upon the windowsill and in a moment was flying away. And he flew till he was over the deep, deep sea, and yet on he flew till he came to his mother's castle. Now the queen, his mother, was taking her walk abroad when she saw the pretty dove flying overhead and alighting on the castle walls. "Here, dancers, come and dance your jigs," she called. "And pipers, pipe you well, for here's my son Florentine. Come back to me to stay, for he's brought no bonny boy with him this time."
"No, mother," said Florentine. "No dancers for me and no minstrels, for my dear wife, the mother of my 7 boys, is to be wed tomorrow, and sad's the day for me."
"What can I do, my son?" said the queen. "Tell me, and it shall be done if my magic has power to do it."
"Well then, mother dear, turn the 24 dancers and pipers into 24 gray herons, and let my 7 sons become 7 white swans, and let me be a goshawk and their leader."
"Alas, alas, my son," she said, "that may not be. My magic reaches not so far, but perhaps my teacher, the spae wife of Ostri, may know better." And away she hurried to the cave of Ostri, and after a while she came out, as white can be, and muttering over some burning herbs she brought out of the cave. Suddenly, Coo, my dove, changed into a goshawk, and around him flew 24 gray herons, and above them flew 7 cygnets. Without a word or a goodbye, off they flew over the deep blue sea, which was tossing and moaning. They flew and they flew till they swooped down on Earl Mar's castle, just as the wedding party were setting out for the church. First came the men-at-arms, and then the bridegroom's friends, and then Earl Mar's men, and then the bridegroom, and lastly, pale and beautiful, Earl Mar's daughter herself. They moved down slowly to stately music till they came past the trees on which the birds were settling. A word from Prince Florentine the goshawk, and they all rose into the air, herons beneath, cygnets above, and goshawks circling above them all. The weddineers wondered at the sight when, swoop, the herons were down among them, scattering the men-at-arms. The swanlets took charge of the bride, while the goshawk dashed down and tied the bridegroom to a tree. Then the herons gathered themselves together into one feather bed, and the cygnets placed their mother upon them, and suddenly they all rose in the air, bearing the bride away with them in safety towards Prince Florentine's home. Surely a wedding party was never so disturbed in this world. What could the weddineers do? They saw their pretty bride carried away and away, till she and the herons and the swans and the goshawk disappeared. And that very day, Prince Florentine brought Earl Mar's daughter to the castle of the queen, his mother, who took the spell off him. And of course, they lived happily ever afterward. The next story is a really short one and is appropriately named Teeny Tiny. Once upon a time, there was a teeny tiny woman lived in a teeny tiny house in a teeny tiny village. Now one day, this teeny tiny woman put on her teeny tiny bonnet and went out of her teeny tiny house to take a teeny tiny walk. And when this teeny tiny woman had gone a teeny tiny way, she came to a teeny tiny gate. So the teeny tiny woman opened the teeny tiny gate and went into a teeny tiny churchyard. And when this teeny tiny woman had gotten into the teeny tiny churchyard, she saw a teeny tiny bone on a teeny tiny grave. And the teeny tiny woman said to her teeny tiny self, "This teeny tiny bone will make me some teeny tiny soup for my teeny tiny supper." So the teeny tiny woman put the teeny tiny bone into her teeny tiny pocket and went home to her teeny tiny house. Now, when the teeny tiny woman got home to her teeny tiny house, she was a teeny tiny bit tired. So she went up to her teeny tiny bed and put the teeny tiny bone into a teeny tiny cupboard. And when this teeny tiny woman had been to sleep a teeny tiny time, she was awakened by a teeny tiny voice from the teeny tiny cupboard, which said, "Give me my bone." And this teeny tiny woman was a teeny tiny bit frightened. So she hid her teeny tiny head under the teeny tiny clothes and went to sleep again. And when she had been to sleep again a teeny tiny time, the teeny tiny voice again cried out from the teeny tiny cupboard, a teeny tiny bit louder, "Give me my bone." This made the teeny tiny woman a teeny tiny bit more frightened. So she hid her teeny tiny head a teeny tiny bit further under the teeny tiny clothes. And when the teeny tiny woman had been to sleep again a teeny tiny time, the teeny tiny voice from the teeny tiny cupboard said again a teeny tiny bit louder, "Give me my bone." And this time, the teeny tiny woman was a teeny tiny bit more frightened, but she put her teeny tiny head
out of the teeny tiny clothes and said in her loudest teeny tiny voice, "Take it!" And the teeny tiny bone was taken that night, for the next morning, when the teeny tiny woman looked in her teeny tiny cupboard, the teeny tiny bone was not to be found. But who had taken it? The teeny tiny woman knew only one answer. It must have been a teeny tiny ghost. This last story is about a clever girl. Here is Molly Whoopi. Once upon a time, there was a man and a wife who had too many children, and they could not get meat for them, so they took the three youngest and left them in a wood. The children traveled and traveled and could see never a house. It began to be dark, and they were hungry. At last, they saw a light and made for it. It turned out to be a house. They knocked at the door, and a woman came to it who said, "What do you want?" They said, "Please let us in and give us something to eat." The woman said, "I can't do that, as my man is a giant, and he would kill you if he comes home." They begged hard. "Let us stop for a while," said they, "and we will go away before he comes." So she took them in and set them down before the fire and gave them milk and bread. But just as they had begun to eat, a great knock came to the door, and a dreadful voice said,
"Fee, fi, fo, fum, I smell the blood of some earthly one. Who have you there, wife?"
Said the wife, "it's three poor lassies, cold and hungry, and they will go away. You won't touch them, man." He said nothing, but he ate up a big supper and ordered them to stay all night. Now he had three lassies of his own, and they were to sleep in the same bed with the three strangers. The youngest of the three children was called Molly Whoopi, and she was very clever. She noticed that before they went to bed, the giant put straw ropes around her neck and her sister's, and round his own lassies' necks he put gold chains. So Molly took care and did not fall asleep, but waited till she was sure everyone was sleeping sound. Then she slipped out of the bed and took the straw ropes off her own and her sister's necks and took the gold chains off the giant's lassies. She then put the straw ropes on the giant's lassies and the gold on herself and her sister's and lay down. And in the middle of the night, up rose the giant, armed with a great club, and felt for the necks with the straw. It was dark. He took his own lassies out of bed onto the floor and battered them until they were dead, and then lay down again, thinking he had managed fine. Molly thought at times she and her sisters were out of there, so she wakened them and told them to be quiet, and they slipped out of the house. They all got out safe, and they ran and ran, and never stopped until morning, when they saw a grand house before them. It turned out to be a king's house, so Molly went in and told her story to the king. He said, "Well, Molly, you are a clever girl, and you have managed well, but if you had managed better and go back and steal the giant sword that hangs on the back of his bed, I would give your eldest sister my eldest son to marry." Molly said she would try. So she went back and managed to slip into the giant's house and crept in below the bed. The giant came home and ate up a great supper and went to bed. Molly waited until he was snoring, and she crept out and reached over the giant and got down the sword. But just as she got out over the bed, it gave a rattle, and up jumped the giant. And Molly ran out of the door, and the sword with her, and she ran and he ran till they came to the bridge of one hair. She got over, but he couldn't, and he said,
"Woe worth ye, Molly Whoopi, I never ye come again."
And she said, "Twice yet," quoth she, "I'll come again." So Molly took the sword to the king, and her sister was married to his son. Well, the king, he said, "Ye've managed well, Molly, but if ye would manage better and steal the purse that lies below the giant's pillow, I would marry your second sister to my second son." And Molly said she would try. So she set out for the giant's house and slipped in and hid again below the bed and waited till the giant had eaten his supper and was snoring sound asleep. She slipped out and slipped her hand below the pillow and got out the purse. But just as she was going out, the giant wakened and ran after her, and she ran and he ran till they came to the bridge of one hair. And she got over, but he couldn't, and he said, "Woe worth ye, Molly Whoopi, never you come again." Once more, quoth she, I'll come again. So Molly took the purse to the king, and her second sister was married to the king's second son. After that, the king said to Molly, Molly, you are a clever girl, but if you would do better yet and steal the giant's ring that he wears on his finger, I will give you my youngest son for yourself. Molly said she would try. So back she went to the giant's house and hid herself below the bed. The giant wasn't long ere he came home, and after he had eaten a great big supper, he went to his bed and shortly was snoring loud. Molly crept out and reached over the bed and got hold of the giant's hand, and she pulled and she pulled until she got off the ring. But just as she got it off, the giant got up and gripped her by the hand.
Now I have catched you, Molly Whuppy, and if I had done as much ill to you as ye have done to me, what would ye do to me?
Molly said, I would put you into a sack, and I'd put the cat inside with you, and the dog inside with you, and a needle and a thread and some shears. And I'd hang you up upon the wall, and I'd go to the wood and choose the thickest stick I could get, and I would come home and take you down and bang you till you were dead.
Well, Molly, says the giant, I'll just do that to you.
So we got a sack and put Molly into it, and the cat and the dog beside her, and a needle and a thread and shears, and hung her up upon the wall. Then he went to the wood to choose a stick. Molly sang out, Oh, if ye see what I see!
Oh, said the giant's wife, what do ye see, Molly?
But Molly never said a word, but, Oh, if ye see what I see! The giant's wife begged that Molly would take her up into the sack till she would see what Molly saw. So Molly took the shears and cut a hole in the sack and took out the needle and thread with her and jumped down and helped the giant's wife up into the sack and sewed up the hole. The giant's wife saw nothing and began to ask to get down again, but Molly never minded, but hid herself at the back of the door. Home came the giant, and a great big tree in his hand, and he took down the sack and began to batter it. His wife cried, It's me, man! But the dog barked and the cat mewed, and he did not know his wife's voice. But Molly came out from the back of the door, and the giant saw her, and he after her, and he ran, and she ran till they came to the bridge of one hair, and she got over, but he couldn't. And he said,
Woe worth you, Molly Whuppy! Never you come again!
Nevermore, quoth she, I will never come again. So Molly took the ring to the king, and she was married to the youngest son. They lived long and prosperously and had many children, all as clever as Molly Whuppy. So we've come to the end of our time together today. If you have a story you'd like to hear, please feel free to write me with your request. If you've written a children's story and would like to share it, let me know as well. I welcome your feedback. You can email me at guima@kciw.org. That's guima@kciw.org. See you next week. Same time, same place, but very different stories. We'll travel to the African continent and hear stories from the great Serengeti Plain that spans Kenya, Tanzania, and Botswana. Here, millions of wild beasts have their annual migration and travel for hundreds of miles. They are joined by zebras, giraffes, and elephants, and of course, followed by the greatest of all predators, the lion. This is Gima saying goodbye and happy reading. This has been a production of KCIW LP 100.7 FM in beautiful Brookings, Oregon.